The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Good morning if you are just after joining us. Lots of you messaging in and lots of love for Grainne and Michael in particular following our conversation in the first hour of the show. Let's get through some, or let's get to some of your opinions. What an awful story from Grainne. My husband died 26 years ago, very young. We were treated humanely in Letterkenny that time. Would have been taken immediately to oncology department. Many times, what's happened? They've gone backwards very much since then. Another same situation 7 years ago, sitting with my terminally ill mother in the ED in agony for several hours. Again, this is 7 years ago. Why is management never assessed in regard to the efficiency of the hospital? I've never heard of a hospital manager being demoted or dismissed for poor performance. A football manager or a company CEO would be out on their ear if they didn't meet targets. That being said, this is a national situation, and believe it or not, of course, not believe it or not, it's a fact because we've spoken to Mr. Murphy. He is also advocating for more resources, more recruitment, more money for the hospital as well, as the rest of the management team. Just for balance there, that's what's the reality is. What an awful story from Grainne, says another listener. Greg, there are only 11 beds on the oncology ward. That's what you're dealing with there. Okay, thank you for that. My son had a heart issue and waited 3.5 hours for an ambulance from Buncrana to Letterkenny. He was put into ED and had to wait a further 4 hours. A heart issue. As a parent, I was terrified. So 7.5 hours before the son was seen. Not sure what age they are, but 7.5 hours. So waited 3.5 hours for the ambulance and then a further 4 hours in the ED. So you can imagine what mum or dad were feeling there up to high dome. At Ballybuffet near Bank of Ireland, there's an unmarked crossing which will eventually cause an accident. I witnessed a girl who got out of her car to cross the road and nearly got struck by a lorry. We constantly address this issue, but nothing happens. I did as much as I can at that time because I knew that, God forbid, if anyone happened, I wanted a clear conscience. I did as much as I could at the time that those were introduced to highlight that particular crossing. And in fact, I've witnessed on definitely two occasions myself, someone nearly being wiped out by a lorry. Even the former Donegal Road Safety Officer had his concerns, but still it's there. And if someone is knocked down and killed, will it change? Probably. Should we have to wait for that to happen before something changes? No. A caller says it's a disgrace that people who are very sick, cancer patients, should not have to go through AED. What is going on? They're saying they shouldn't have to go through ED there, of course. And on to a couple of different things now. Vaping in enclosed areas is getting a joke. This is not fair on the non-smoker breathing in toxic fumes. Do you see that a lot? Is it something that bothers you? Share your stories, 086 60 25000. The Polestar roundabout, God help the drivers who can't use a roundabout when there isn't any traffic lights. There is three sets of lights to go through if you're coming from the Dry Arch Road and you're heading at the Remelton Road. Indeed, is it three or not more? It's going to be interesting. I'm going to be fascinated to see when those lights are switched on, what goes on there. So also last week on Friday or Thursday, we were speaking to a mum or dad, a parent anyway, I know that for a fact, who their child was not being asked or told or seatbelt wearing was not being enforced on the school bus. And they were careful about that. They were, worried about that. And the question was being asked, should they take it up with the driver first or should they take it up with the company? I suggested the company, even mentioning it to the driver rather than going above their head just to get a lay of the land. But anyway, a bus driver was on just after that conversation and pointed out what's kind of obvious, I suppose. As a bus driver, bus drivers are not allowed to put seatbelts on a child. They can advise, but with safety protocols now, they're not allowed to go near the child. It's up to the parent to inform and educate. So the driver can say, right, everyone, seatbelts on, but they can't go up and put the seatbelt on. And there is a clear role here with parents to inform and educate their children, they say. I went to Maynooth and we got the campus accommodation. We had three laptops on the go and two phones. The accommodation was very poor. Mushrooms growing in the bathrooms. The maintenance came in and picked them. Well, that's one way to pick mushrooms. Can't it be compulsory to wear a high-vis vest to see many people walking at night, barely visible? I don't know if it's... Should it be compulsory? I'm not a big fan of more laws and stuff, right? When we can sort of employ our common sense. But if a lot of people are out walking and don't have high-vis. I don't know. The guards will pull over, and if they've got them in the boot, say, will you stick that on? I mean, they can't enforce it as such unless there's a clear and present danger, I'd imagine, but still. Right, OK, we are going to take the bingo numbers now, and then we have loads more guests and topics. Get yours and your views into us. I'll remind you one more time, shall I, of the numbers. I try not to do it so often because I know so many of you are regular listeners and are so familiar with them, but there's people tuning in all the time. So your WhatsApps and your texts, it's the one number here, and it always has been, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. If you're listening to us in Derry, Tyrone, or elsewhere, 00353 86 60 25000. Your telephone calls again, 074 91 25 00 91 25000. Again, from outside the Republic, 00353 749 125000. And emails from anywhere, comments@highlandradio.com. All right, back shortly. Okay, so as we've been covering now for a week or two in the programme, parents with children under the Children's Disability Network team across Donegal have received letters explaining they may lose out on services due to recruitment and vacancy issues. The letter outlined that children with the most complex needs in terms of speech therapy, occupational therapy and psychology services will be prioritised. And then we heard from a series of parents in relation to that, and then we had a further conversation on Thursday about really what kind of effort is being put in to recruit people in these disciplines, between yearly panels and jobs being hard to find and so on and so forth. We're continuing with that conversation now. Laura McGuinness joins us on the programme now. Laura, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it.
Hiya, Greg. Thanks.
No, thanks for helping us to keep this on the agenda, Laura. What's your family situation?
My eldest boy, Reese, he's 7 now. He was born with a rare syndrome. So he's been under the CDNT team from, I think he was 2-3 months old. But it's literally just getting worse and worse as the months go on. The latest problem is, like, Reese, we all got them letters, and Reese would be classed as severe. Like, he's under loads of teams in Crumlin and Letterkenny, and like his neurology department would recommend, especially for his muscle issues, that he gets physio at least once a month. And it's ongoing about a year now since he's seen physio.
And this is the type of stuff that needs to be consistent and ongoing for his best outcomes, Laura.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In terms of speech and language,
yeah,
what's the situation there?
Non-existent. Reese, actually, well, he's in a special unit, so he is in the local school.
Right.
But he would be in second class now, but it actually got to the stage where the school had to come up with a communication plan through PECs and different things. Like, they made up their own plan for him because, well, the speech therapist finally came out at Easter time to see the teacher, finally. So he was about 3.5 years into school at that stage. But pretty much none. I've not heard nothing since either.
And again, it's like all the stories we hear, the best outcome for our children is when they get these services as early as possible and with some level of consistency.
Yeah. No, definitely, because even his neurologist, like, Reese's syndrome is extremely rare, but the kids that are in, like, England, America, they're far miles ahead of Reese and the kids in Ireland. Like, there's only, I think, 4 or 5 in Ireland with Reese's syndrome, but these kids are completely behind on everything. Like, Reese didn't walk till he was just turned 6, and now, like, his hips and everything, like, we're waiting on a wheelchair now as well, the past 7 months, because he's outgrown the one he's in at the minute. But like, his hips and his back is starting to get affected now as well. But it's just the whole across the board has just gotten a joke now. I think everyone's just had enough of it now.
And I'm not trying to pull at the heartstrings or anything, but I really want us all to understand, Laura, from a parent's perspective, and the challenge of raising Reese as well. Listen, you know, I'm sure he's a brilliant boy, but it's a challenge for you. But when you sort of see children in similar situations far in advance of him, just because of where they live, it must be really, really tough as a mum.
No, definitely. I say, if Reese had been, and even doctors and nurses that do care for Reese, says if Reese had been given the actual early intervention, which he was meant to have had, he probably, like, he would still be disabled in every way, but he would have far more better life skills. like even the basics of getting Reece to feed himself, he was doing it great. But with his syndrome, it is progressive, so his skills do lack backwards. If he is sick, he regresses backwards. So it's like he's had multiple surgeries, and even getting a physio to come out to the house and do physio. Like, Crumlin couldn't believe how bad it was up here at one stage. Just the basics that if any child, never mind a sick child, should get just doesn't happen anymore.
I think you also mentioned to Donna Marie about respite or the lack thereof.
Yes.
What's the situation there, Laura?
Well, Reece was approved like for a weekend or a few days during the week respite, probably, I think it was at least 2 years ago. But the local one in Inishowen and down in Cairndon, Riverwalk, I think it's called, is still closed off to the patients. I think they're on about reopening it now soon, but he is on the list for Ballymacool. But as you probably know, Greg, Ballymacool can hardly keep up with the Letterkenny area, getting people, and never mind taking on the Inishowen kids as well.
Yeah, I've had that from another parent before, saying the exact same thing, indeed. Yeah, there's a line here, and I think it came from you, Laura. Another generation of disabled kids and parents destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a shocking thing to be able to say.
Yeah, because I was talking to a mum in the town. Her daughter now is probably in her 40s, disabled as well, and she says things have literally not changed in all the years.
I was chatting to a family over the weekend, and they said one of the greatest problems they have is if anything happens to them, because they're there and they're able as much as you can to battle for the children. But this lady says, well, what happens if I get cancer, or what happens if I, you know, she said something, I won't say it on air, but in other words, she died really quickly, a car crash actually. I don't think there's any harm in saying that. She went to bed scared as to what would happen to her children if something happened to her, because she doesn't feel...
Yeah, because, like, I know of parents, she's actually having not have a surgery, because if the child was put into emergency accommodation, the child could be sent anywhere to Sligo, Mayo, anywhere. There's no places local for emergency accommodation for kids now at the minute.
Right, it's tough. This is something we all need to take an interest in, Laura, don't we? Because there are, as I said before, there are hundreds, thousands of families around the region affected by this. But it's hard to get everyone on the same page to sort of, this is what I'm trying to do here, to let the powers that be or the general population realise that so many people are being affected now. Some severely affected, others not so, but all of the children need the interventions as early as possible for all a variety of different reasons.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Best wishes to everyone, Laura.
Thanks very much
for helping us highlight the situation. I really do appreciate it, and
Greg, thanks.
The rest, okay. Take care of yourself. Stephanie's with us as well. Stephanie, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Hey, Greg, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, okay. What's the situation with your daughter, I think it is?
Yeah, my daughter, Rhea, she was born in 2018. And everything seemed great when she was born, but as time went on, we started noticing different wee things. She wasn't making eye contact, wouldn't respond to her name, things like that. She was delayed in her milestones. So in 2019, October, her PHN referred her to early intervention, it was at the time. We waited then until April 2021.
Can I just ask a question, Stephanie, before you go on? Do you know when you got the letter saying, right, she's being referred? At that time, did you think, okay, now we're making progress? We know there's an issue, and now we're being referred to professionals to deal with that. Like, almost naively, did you feel like, right, we're making progress here, before then it became apparent that the wheels move so slowly?
Yeah, well, our PHN did make us aware that there would be a slight waiting list, but overall it wouldn't be that long, maybe 6 months to 8 months, she said at the time. But it was a year and a half later before we were actually called. So we had our first assessment. And with early intervention, you have to meet the criteria of needing at least 3 services. So with that assessment, Rhea met the criteria for the 3 services, which was occupational therapy, speech and language, and psychology. Mm-hmm. So with that, we then got what you call a service statement. And basically on that service statement, it tells you when to expect to start receiving all these services. So for occupational therapy, we were given a date of December 2022. And for psychology, we were given a date of New Year's Eve on 2022 as well. Mm. So I instantly knew there was no way she was going to be seen on New Year's Eve. It just wasn't going to happen. Now, to this day, she still hasn't seen OT or psychology. So with that, time went on, we hadn't seen these services. So I made a formal complaint to the disability team. Mm-hmm. And that was in May 2022. And in July 2022, they contacted me back to say that a recent High Court ruling in March 2022 stated that the early intervention assessment approach used in our child's assessment did not meet the requirements of the Disability Act. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we had to start the process all over again and get reassessed. So in November 2022, they finally called us to reassess her. And again, she met the requirements needed. And within a week of that, they phoned me and asked me, would I be willing to make a trip to a private clinic in Belfast to get reassessed. So I jumped at the opportunity and took it. So in January of this year, Rhea was diagnosed with autism, level one. And she was referred by the Belfast Clinic for Occupational Therapy and Speech and Language. Now, Rhea did have four sessions of speech and language back in 2022. Mm-hmm. And after them four sessions, we were starting to see progress.
Oh, really?
Rhea can talk, but she finds it very hard to understand. And she has a different meaning from words to what we would. And things like pronunciation and things like that that she needed help with. So we were starting to see some progress. And then on the fourth session, we got told that they had to leave it there as there was other children they needed to see. And they were called back in 6 months. That was a year and a half ago. So since Rhea's diagnosis in January, we have yet to be contacted by EIT about anything.
You, like hundreds of other families, got a letter through the post last week or the week before?
Yes. Yes, to say that there is no available psychologist or occupational therapist available in Donegal, and that any child that needs speech and language, it'll only be the severe children that will be seen. So that's basically where we're at the moment. It's a constant fight.
And That's dashed hope, right? Because there's no, I mean, they say, oh, we're trying this and we're trying that, but we've learned from Leonard Watson and others that and since we talked about this, I've been contacted personally, and we're going to speak to a couple of them, by four or five people who are either qualified or want to work in the area of OT, speech and language and what have you, but they can't get in here. So they're having to go to Britain.
I personally know one girl that has all the qualifications, and they will not employ her.
So we can't ignore that, Stephanie. This is a reality. No. So they're screaming out for staff, right? We know people that are available to work and want to, but they can't get those jobs, and they're going over to the UK, who are obviously mopping them up because it's like Christmas for them.
Correct.
So what is the future? How does this change so that the anger, the frustration, the upset is relieved somewhat from some parents? Because there doesn't seem a great deal of hope here, and I hate to dash hope, but do you know where I'm coming from, Stephanie?
There's no hope. Like, for me, myself, and I can probably speak for many other parents, it is a constant fight, day in and day out. And anything you learn is from other parents or from Google or places like that. There is no help out there whatsoever. None. That's sad. They need a massive, massive recruitment drive. But again, as you highlighted, there's no advertisements for any of these placements.
Now, I just want to say, whilst you're on, the HSE is actively recruiting at the moment for, and it just so happened I was on TikTok and Snapchat and going around different platforms, and I kept getting this advert, have you thought about a career in the HSE? We're currently recruiting for entry-level clerical officer positions. Now, clerical officers play a vital role in the health service, so this is not to say they're not pen pushers or what some people might call them. They're very important staff, and I recognise that, okay? And then there's a fancy video that follows this. I've seen nothing like that for OT. I've seen nothing like that for speech and language therapy. I could only find one CDNT job available in Donegal on the HSE's own website. Now, then someone said to me, oh, but they're advertising these jobs on Facebook. What? Facebook?
No, you know I've what I mean? Never.
So I
no,
so they are literally spending thousands upon thousands with Snapchat, TikTok, and other trying to hire clerical officer positions, which is important and is connected to some industrial action that's ongoing. Yeah. But where is the outside the box thinking to keep our OTs, our psychologists, and our experts? Experts to keep them here or to recruit them to here? Nothing is happening. That's in and people like you, Stephanie, I don't know, and I'm saying this right, I don't know how you do it. I genuinely don't know how you do it.
It's tough, and you feel like you're being ignored and no one's listening or no one believes you, or you just feel so isolated and alone. And it impacts the whole family. It's not just myself or my daughter. It's the whole family it impacts, and it's just, I have no words anymore. I don't. It's a sad reality that we're all facing together, and I really feel for the parents that have it tougher than I do. Like, we're blessed in a sense that Rhea can talk and she can try and express herself and things like that, but there's young kids out there that can't talk and need more help than Rhea does, and they are getting absolutely nothing. It's so sad.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. It's so sad, and it's a crisis that we're living through now, that maybe there'll be a documentary or a book on in 20 or 30 years, the children that were left behind or forgotten, or however they might frame it or describe it. We're living in this now. Stephanie, you know, we are all together. I know you don't feel it, but we are with you as well, with everything you're going through. I don't mean us at Highland. We are, of course. I'm on about the whole community listening, because I think we're starting to get this sort of awareness now and trying to get it out there so that people don't feel alone, Stephanie. And you've helped in doing that. And it's, you know what's so typical? Even with the terrible, and everything is relative, you want the best for your child like everyone does, but even in everything you're going through, you're still thinking of other people that are in a worse situation. And that's the type of people we are, and it's amazing. And best wishes to you and the family, and stay in touch with us.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for bringing attention to it. Thank you.
No, it's critical. And I've posted more information and some interviews we've carried on this before on my Facebook page as well. There's a half an hour video there where we talk about access to mental health services and all. And I just want a quick word too about those that are working in this area. And I've spoken to them as well. This isn't a criticism of anyone or even the necessarily the local management of these services, who are working in very difficult situations themselves as well. There's always another layer above people. And this goes far beyond, I think, what's happening locally. And I hope I'm not wrong in saying that not unlike the situation with the hospital. This is not a criticism of the staff and the people working tirelessly and stretching themselves in the services. This is to support you guys as well, so that people who are higher up in higher pay grades, that will never lose their job no matter how bad things go, that maybe our politicians will get on board with this as well and put so much pressure on them that something has to be done. So it's not frontline staff versus us. I see it as all of us as a community with the frontline staff, trying to get them more colleagues, get them more supports, get them better conditions, and look and have a better opportunity to look after our children. So I hope that is clear in the coverage, but I just want to clarify that this is not a criticism of the staff or local management. This is about supporting families, kids, and their parents. Katrina's back with us again. Katrina, thanks very much for joining us. I appreciate you coming back on the programme. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. Now, you had a meeting, and Leonard Watson also attended this. This is Spriaga Sport meeting. So what came from that, or what further information can you share with us?
So we contacted Spree. We have a monthly meeting the first Tuesday of every month, and that was last Tuesday, and there was 29 families in attendance. Spree are on board now to try and help the families in the area to see what they can do. They have a survey going out now to see what services we need in the area, and then Spree is going to go towards the HSE to apply for funding to see if they can facilitate the likes of, you know, occupation therapy, speech therapy, physiotherapy, that stuff, and through Spree. Now, Albert was there at the meeting, as was Martin.
This is Albert Doherty and Martin McDermott, is it?
Yeah.
Or yeah,
they were there. Yeah, so they were there at the meeting, and they just sat back, and they took notes, and like there was families there that everybody was in the same boat, Greg. Like, you know, at the end of the day, all we want is our children to have the best support going forward. But at the moment, the support's not there. And as I said to you before, the Friday I was talking to myself and Kathy, and I think it was Michelle, do you know, like, this is the vital part now, where this needs to be early. It has, if it doesn't come early, Greg, it's delaying everything. It's delaying getting help from, you know, speech and language. It's delaying everything. It's a knock-on then. Like, if you need financial support and you don't have your diagnosis, it's harder to get that stuff. So, like, this is what we're trying to get the help for now. So that the family out there has the support that they need.
Mm.
And, like, Albert was, he's at this meeting that's happening next month. I think there was a man on with you on Friday. Watson, I can't remember his first name.
Leonard Watson, yep.
Leonard was on. And I think it's the same meeting that next month mm-hmm. that Albert and Martin are going to go. And they took notes from the meeting in Spree on last Tuesday. So, like, we're not backing down, Greg, is what I'm trying to say.
No,
like,
100%.
You know, we're not backing down. And, like, Spree are so good at, you know, they're going to do this survey now and see how they get on. Could they get funding from the HSE to run it down there if it's private? We don't know. We're just kind of trying to see how we get on. But we're not giving up, and we're going to keep going. And if, as I said, if it needs to be a case that we need to do, like, you know, I don't know, a picket or I can't even know what the word, right word for that is. Like,
protest, like, or you know, demonstration, protest, or whatever way you want
we'll
to describe
it.
Yeah.
We will do it.
Yeah.
Like, and I said to you before, Greg, when you get into these services, like, my wee boy Ben has happily started school there. He's nearly 2 weeks done now, coming on Wednesday. And he loves school. Mm. And he's happy at school. But there's children, unless you have these diagnoses, it's harder for you to get into these
delays
schools
everything.
To get the help.
Yeah, it delays everything.
It delays everything, Greg. Like, and it really does. Mm. And I know I'm so lucky. But, like, going forward, like, Ben still needs speech therapy. He still needs occupational therapy. He still needs all that there. But we can't get that now. Now, I have done courses with the girls up in Buncrana, and these courses are brilliant. But, like, there's families out there that they're just lost.
Yeah, and the courses are fine as well, but, like, you know, not everyone is going to have the time. You know, you could have two parents working, you could have a single parent situation where they have to work. Life is tough as it is with cost of living. They could be living in an effective concrete block house, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great if people can sort of tool themselves up and effectively become speech therapists themselves. But it's just not going to suit everyone. And even Spriaga Sport, brilliant organisation, they do fantastic work. But that's almost a desperate act in that, you know, they're saying, well, can we do some of this stuff because the HSE is not doing it? You know what I mean? It's not like that's not really the way it should be. And we see iCare and other groups, the Blue Stack Foundation, kind of having to do the same. If they weren't there, look at the services that would be lost if it wasn't for sort of, you know, independent organisations often run and supported by families that are affected doing this stuff. But it is, it's a glimmer. Great. It's a glimmer, Spriga Sport. I think even the, putting the application might shine a light on the situation we're in, Katrina. But we need something. We need some hope. We need a commitment. We need to see these jobs being advertised. As I say, I could only see one CDNT job on the HSE's website. I've seen no social media ads for it, but I've spoken to a lot of people who want to work in these jobs, but they can't get the jobs. Yeah, and I know you talked last. I know you talked last week. Sorry, Katrina, about the cost of living. But some people aren't even getting the chance to go into the job and see if they can live because they're not able to connect to the jobs, and that's crazy. We're losing these valuable assets to other countries and regions. It's hard to comprehend, Katrina. You know better than anyone.
Do you know what, Greg? It's just about, and I know there's families out there that are completely burnt out. I seen it at that meeting, there was women there and men there, and they were just like, you know, we don't have, the fight's left. It's because they're fighting for so many years. Yeah. I'm only on this journey this past couple of years, and that's why there's, if I wanted, I will go after anything I can get. But I mean, you're just being met by, as I one, a mammy said at the meeting, it's like being stuck in a maze. And you get so far, and then you're met by a block, and then you're like, you have to go back, and then you have to go another way, and you have to go. We shouldn't have to do this, Greg. We shouldn't, we really shouldn't. And once you get into these services, they're so good, but it's just getting in.
I mean, the people on the ground are brilliant at what they do, and we heard earlier even three or four sessions improvements. The staff are great, but they're stretched. They're under pressure. And they need more colleagues, even maybe better conditions, but certainly more colleagues. Keep fighting, Katrina, and we'll chat again. And, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be 1,000 people, maybe 100 concerns, parents, mothers, whoever it might be. It would be hard to ignore.
It's just about Greg not giving up. And I know there's families out there that are just after what's in, but I'm just going, just dig that a bit deeper. Come on, one, let's just keep pushing, because they're going to eventually have to start listening to us. You know, we're not going away. We're not going away. We have to get this help, because our children are suffering, and it's just not fair, Greg. It's not fair.
Okay, Katrina, thanks for that as always. Katrina Devlin, take care of yourself. Love to the family. Thank you very much. Indeed. And I do recognise that there are some people listening that might go, are they talking about that again? But please bear with us. Please do. It's just really important that these parents get a voice and get a platform. And that's what we're providing. And this is our children. It could be my next child. It could be your next child. It could be your first. You know what I mean? So this is something that either affects us all directly now. It could affect us, or maybe affects us by one degree of separation. So appreciate your bearing with us on that. It's just so critically important, I think. Right, okay. I have to take a break. We're going to keep going, of course, on the show. Loads coming up between now and 12, including your comments that are coming in thick and fast. Lend your voice to the conversation, 086 60 25,000, or call 074 91 25,000. Now, did you know you could double or even triple the interest you're earning on your savings if you switch to a European bank? The ECB has increased interest rates several times in the past 18 months. However, Irish banks have been slow to pass it on to deposits, despite charging higher rates for those with loans or mortgages. Mark Cohn from MoneySherpa.ie is back on the show with us. Good morning to you, Mark. How are you keeping?
Morning, Greg. I'm very well, thanks.
Great to have you on the show. Right, okay, so this isn't a workaround. Is it perfectly legal? You're not shifting money overseas and going to get a visit by revenue here, are you?
No, you're not. I mean, this is one of the advantages of being in the EU. It's an open market, let's not forget, and that counts for your money as well. So it is perfectly legal, Greg. You do still have to declare to the Irish Revenue that you your interest and how much you've returned, and you still will have to pay your deposit interest retention tax of 33%. There's no getting around that. But the interest rate difference between what you can earn across the EU and what you can earn with your money here in Ireland is really significant.
Is there any implications for the state? Because there is billions in this country in savings. It doesn't really matter to the state if it's moved elsewhere, because presumably actually it's better for the state because their tax take increases.
Yeah, I mean, on a state level, no. For the banks, this could be significant if everybody all at once decided to move their money. So there's 130 billion on deposit right now in Irish bank accounts. And on average, that's getting around 0.1 or 0.2%. Whilst across the EU, with ECB rates being as high as 4.25%, EU retail banks are offering up to 4%. So that 130 billion that people have got on deposit in Irish banks with an inflation rate of around 5%, that's losing Irish savers about 5 billion annually. So there's a big incentive for people to start to shop around and put their money where it's more effective. And of course, if they all do that all at once, then there would be no money left in the Irish banks.
I think it's called a run on the banks, isn't it? Maybe we don't want to see that. But people are very defensive about the money, to the point that many people actually don't even want to put it into the bank. They'd prefer it just to sit under their mattress, metaphorically or literally speaking. So, like, what kind of protections are there? Because obviously the banking crash is still very fresh in our minds and what have you. So where could you deposit your money to get that 4%, and what kind of protections are there for you?
Yeah, Greg, it's a great question. So the first thing to deal with the protections. So if you keep your money in the EU, the bank deposit protection scheme is EU-wide. So your savings would be protected with any single institution up to 100,000, whether you put your money in Ireland or whether you put your money in Germany or Lithuania or anywhere within the European Union. So it is equally protected is essentially the thing that people need to know. Now, as to where you can put your deposits, once you start to think about how you shop around, the first thing is you don't actually have to move outside of Ireland to get a decent rate, because there are European players that are now entering the Irish market. So the one that I would highlight for savers is the Dutch bank, who are called Bunk, B-U-N-Q. And Bunk are like the Dutch equivalent of Revolut. So we know Revolut well in Ireland, who are obviously based in the UK and operate here. Bunk do the same thing. But the reason I pointed out for savers is they're offering 1.56%. So the best rate in the market for instant savings here in Ireland through the Irish banks is 0.01% from AIB, whilst Bunk are offering 1.56%. And they are regulated here in Ireland. They have an Irish IBAN. You could put your current account with them. And their app is pretty much as good as Revolut's. And
so what does that mean then in real terms? So say just a round figure, €1,000, right? So if you lodge that with Bunk, that annual rate is an APR. It's an annual rate, sorry. So what would your return be? It's basic maths, isn't it? What, 14, 114? What, 1460 on 1,000?
Yeah, that's right. It depends how long you'd keep your money in. I mean, the number I have in front of me, just to save me doing the mental arithmetic.
Damn, I was hoping to make you do a mental arithmetic.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Monday morning for a start, Greg. I've got 25,000 over 3 years, right? Because what we do say, and I know people might think this is a huge sum of money, but for good financial wellness, and I know this is very difficult to get, but really you want to have 6 months of your income on deposit somewhere as an emergency fund. So 25,000, if you look at the national wage, is not a crazy number. And I know not a lot of people have this, but...
But enough do that there's 130 billion on deposit, so...
Correct. So if you take that 25,000 and over 3 years, that would give you an extra 750 with Bunk, as opposed to on AIB. So that's why it's worth people looking into this. Now, that's instant. So you're not tying your money up, and that's what you should be doing with an emergency fund. But if you were really lucky and you had more money to do than the 25,000 and you could afford to tie it up longer, you can get up to 3.35% via a German fintech called Raisin. And what Raisin do is a portal. So you log into them and they let you access banks right across the EU. So there's a bank in France called U-United that's offering over 3% for a one-year term deposit. And the best one-year term deposit in Ireland is 2% from permanent TSB. So again, you know, almost double the rates by shopping
around. Now, the banks here are arguing that they're doing us a favour, actually. The reason that they are not giving us, when I say us, I can't include myself in this, but anyway, the royal us. The reason they're giving us low interest rates on our deposits is because they're being very good and not passing on all the increases on our mortgages. So it's actually they're working for us, Mark. They're working for us. That's why we have the highest interest rates in one of the highest interest rates in the EU and one of the lowest deposit interest rates. They're working for us.
Yeah, well, forgive me for being slightly cynical.
I think I was a bit cynical in the question, but go ahead.
Ireland's quite unusual. We've actually got more money on deposit than we have loaned out. So if you were to choose how to make the most money, you choose to keep deposit interest rates low and mortgage rates relatively low as well. So I suspect that's what the banks are actually doing. They're not really doing us a favour. They make more money by choosing to keep the interest rates low. You don't have to. You could move your money and benefit from the EU. And I think that what would do, of course, is that would force the Irish banks worried about losing those deposits to look at their rates a little bit higher. And, you know, this is the beauty of competition. And there is competition if people shop around. That would force the banks to give better returns to their savers.
We can vote with our feet. Isn't that the old saying? A caller says, do you have the same rights when it comes to the likes of Revolut? I feel like when you can walk into the bank, there's an extra layer of security and accountability. I wouldn't agree with that. I think that's perceived. But you can tell me whether it's perception or reality.
Yeah, I mean, the law is the same. I think we're finding, you know, if the more and more you walk into your retail bank now, the less and less empowered the retail bank staff are to actually help you, unfortunately. So I think whether that was true in the past, you know, I think the days of the local bank manager being empowered to make decisions on their customers' behalf is pretty much gone. I mean, you do still see that in the credit unions, but I don't think you really see that in the banks. So you know, under the law, you've got all the protections that you've got with the Irish banks.
All right, and very finally, do people have to do this work themselves, or does your company work as an intermediary, giving advice in terms of availing of higher interest rates elsewhere, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, on MoneyShipper.ie, we do have articles that cover where the best current rates are, and you can sign up via there. But it's more of a do-it-yourself thing if you signed up to Revolut, it's as simple as that. You just sign up to these banks and away you go.
But go to MoneySherpa to get the information. And sure, while you're there, look around. Okay, listen, thanks very much, Mark. Take care of yourself. Mark Cohn there.